a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, episode 293. Ooh, I have got to get on this 300 plan soon, or we're just going to not end up doing something cool. I'm so busy. It's like ridiculous to try to plan something that crazy. If I did it, it would have to be on a weekend too. So it's like, I got to figure out if I could even do that. I guess I could skip some shows, which let's be honest, I'm probably going to anyway. I had too much going on. Busy day today. My goodness. Oh, apologies in advance. I'm sniffling today. I feel fine. I just, for some reason, I got a stopped up nose right now. And I've just been like, I woke up in the middle of the night, like even with my humidifier on my CPAP machine, because I have sleep apnea. So I have this little CPAP machine and I have a humidifier. So it's a built-in humidifier, right? I woke up like not breathing through one side of my nose. I had to like go get like saline solution. Like, I know probably too much information, but gosh, I don't know what's going on. It's just dry and weird right now. It's like the weather is just kind of strange. It's in that spring. We're becoming spring. And maybe some stuff is like, it's been 70 a few days. Maybe some stuff starting to kind of sprout or something. Maybe it's allergies, but I'm not really sneezing much. But anyway, so I said all that to say, I'm sorry for the inevitable. You're going to get a little bit of in the microphone today. So, oh goodness. So, this is coffee versus the sushi coma. That's the theme of today's show is coffee versus the sushi coma. So, all right, bless me, audience, for I have sinned. I got sushi for lunch, which was rice, which I've been kind of eating. I kind of just have given in to eating white rice for starches. Because I stopped eating like much starch for a couple days, and this arthritic condition I get when I'm losing weight, but I'm not eating starch, kind of kicked in. And so I had to start eating starch. And if I don't have a sweet potato around, I can't. So I'm pretty good with white rice. I think I'm okay with it. So I was eating it, but I needed to go buy and get some coconut aminos so that I could have it with my sushi. But there was a big wreck. Like literally, like I was trying to go straight and a wreck happened in front of me at Arapahoe and Dayton in Southern Denver metro area, Greenwood Village. And I couldn't get through. And it was like, they're doing all this construction down the road there. And it was going to be a pain to go. It was going to like add 35, 45 minutes on the My Little Sushi adventure. And so I ate gluten-free soy sauce. My first time I've eaten soy since Lent. But if you listened yesterday, you heard for Lent, the main thing I'm giving up is giving up. I gave up on giving up. So I'm not giving up because I gave it up. So there you go. I was going to be good and not eat a whole lot because, you know, A, it's Friday during Lent. So gluttony, probably not a good idea. B, I knew I had to record and we eat that much sushi. Oh, sushi coma kicks in. But I have this friend, Steven. He's an Indonesian dude. His dad's a local Indonesian pastor here. And he's a sushi chef. That's hard to say. Sushi chef. Sushikatsu. And sometimes he works the floor, too. And so he was working the floor kind of as a manager today. And Steven likes to hook me up. So he knows what I like and we talk about food. We talk about sushi. And so I had a copious amount of sushi, enough sushi. And I was ordering slightly more than enough sushi and it was on the way. Now this is an all you can eat place where if you don't eat everything you order, you have to pay for it. Or I probably wouldn't have to because I go there pretty frequently. They all know me, but it's frowned upon for sure. Even if they're not going to charge you to leave sushi on the table. And so I'm sitting there and I had ordered some more sushi and Steven comes rolling by and I was like, oh, cool, man. And it wasn't what I ordered. It was like six pieces of nigiri, Three of them is tuna. Three of them salmon. And the salmon was like all salmon belly. And the tuna was like the really, really, really well marbled piece. Maybe one piece of it might have been actually Toro, like the salmon, the tuna belly, which is like the best thing in the world. Just, I mean, sidebar. I know some of you are in Southern California that listen to me. Shout out to you, John Coons. I know you're listening. Up in Woodland Hills. I know it's kind of far north if you're down in the LA metro area, but up in Woodland Hills, there's a place called Brothers Sushi. Just do yourself a favor. It's not cheap. It's small, simple, not cheap, crazy fresh. Best sushi I've ever had, hands down. But just swing by, and if you do nothing else, just get a couple pieces of Toro. That tuna belly, the Toro, it's like the pork belly of tuna. It's the pork belly of the sea. Goodness. It is amazing. It is epic. It just melts in your mouth. So good. Anyway, so Steven rolls by my table at Sushi Katsu, slaps this tuna down, this food down. I start eating. I realize it's not what I ordered. I'm like, oh, man, I just ate six pieces of sushi. Now I have all this other sushi coming. Oh, so I ate what I ordered, too, and now I'm in the sushi coma. But I got a big, fat, very strongly brewed cup of coffee, and it's fighting the sushi coma. But I have a funny feeling that a nap is going to happen after I record before I get started on the old weekend. And I ran into all the kids from CNA, Carl and Carl Bunderson, Peter Zelasco, Marianne Medlin, my roommate, the lovely and talented Perry West, and many others, Kate Veek. They were all having a team building lunch, I guess. Or maybe they just all decided to go to lunch together, but it seemed like it was all CNA people. So then the lovely and talented Sophia Bunderson was there with the lovely, one of my favorite little babies in the world, Maria Bunderson, who used to love me, who used to think I was the greatest thing in the world. But I tried to hold her and she was kind of like, not so much. And I was like, oh man, you're killing me, Maria. Maria used to love me, but I get it. I have a big scary beard now. She's not used to that. Middle of a loud restaurant. I'm standing up. Her mom and dad are sitting down. I get it. It's a lot. She hasn't seen me in a while. A lot to take. I'm just saying I got let down by a baby today. I got to just, it hurt. So that was fun. So that was my little adventure. So I needed something to kind of put an exclamation point on. So I got up. So we have been for 5 years, I've been running this cafe in Denver. And for 5 years, we've been talking about the possibility of expanding and remodeling and adding food service. And today I sat down with the architect and the powers that be, and we started talking about it and looking at it and what it would be like. And I am designing the menu over the weekend for the first shot over the bow of doing something. And we may actually get to remodel that cafe. I'm so excited. I love envisioning community too, man. It's like this interaction and stuff. We were just like, well, yeah, if you have this and the natural light will be coming in, if we put this banquette along this wall, then it'll feel like this and people will see these people walking by to go to the conference room and there'll be interaction in this way. I love just envisioning spaces and how people are going to use them, especially when I can use the scope and shape of a space to create a certain interaction. I'm just into it. It's what, call me weird. It's what I do for a living. So shout out to Adam Hermanson too. He's the architect that we were working with here in Denver. Adam did the initial design on the cafe a long time ago, and I see him around every once in a while. Hopefully he's going to help me design the first prototype for Calyx, which is moving right along. Denver, Colorado, you're going to get a new shop, coffee house, maybe coffee house bookstore. I have shocking, big gutsy plans, or actually very small gutsy plans for this shop. I can't wait. Finally, so this morning, okay, I'm gonna be a little vulnerable here. As you all know, ADD is my superpower, but ADD is also my kryptonite. And I had lost a business and some stuff, had to shut down, kind of just came the Colorado tail between my legs and stuff, and things that happened, and I got busy and stuff needed to be caught up, and I have no concept of linear time evidently, and I had gotten really behind on my taxes. And I had all this stuff that needed to be done. It was getting to be an issue. Like the IRS was involved level of issue. And, I got this tax attorney that used to be in our building, and I got to be friends with him, and I had found out how much it would cost, and I had actually paid him. So the solution was paid for. They were just waiting on me. And then we figured out that I wasn't going to get X, Y, and Z done. So they said, we can do X, Y, and Z for you, but it is going to cost A, B, C. So I paid them more, and they were still waiting on me. And I realized I was just avoiding looking through the records of this really hard moment in my life and having to unsort it and face it. And over the weekend, I did that, or over the last couple of days, I did that. And this morning I took boxes of stuff, or a big thick box of stuff, and dumped it into a paid for professional's lap, and everything's going to be okay. I felt like I could run a marathon, except for I'm big and fat, my ankles hurt. But if I wasn't big and fat and my ankles didn't hurt, I would have ran a marathon. I could have. I felt like there was a mountain off my shoulders. So weight lifted. It's just so weird that, like, that shame. Anytime it's like your personal trainer, your tax attorney, whatever, anytime you're in front of a professional and you've done what they do really badly and just let it get out of control, and their job in this world is to be in control, I just have to remind myself that I'm in control of things that they're out of control of, because it's shameful. Anyway, let's go to the break. When we get back, we'll talk about more shameful things. You're listening to The Counter Position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your tired host, Andrew Whaley. And, sushi coma. Not so bad. The coffee has fought off the sushi coma. May need, but as you can hear, I don't know what it would sound like. The cup is empty. So next break, I may have to swing in for another cup of coffee here. I would have done so during the last break if I'd have noticed it was empty, but I got busy. See, ADD, kryptonite, and superpower. all right, to finish up the chatty what's going on segment, weekend plans, not much. I can't drink. Is that disturbing? It's just like, hey, what are your plans? Oh, I can't imbibe alcohol, so nothing. So is that what you normally do? Maybe. It's like, I'm single and I live in Denver, Colorado, and I'm a Roman Catholic, or that's literally, if you don't drink, there is nothing to do. I have had 5 invitations for stuff to do tonight. And 4 of them involved alcohol, and the 5th one involved dinner and drinks after the thing. And I'm like, really, really? I mean, if you can't, I mean, I guess I go to some of these things, stand around, drink club soda. Hi, what are you having? Oh, I'm having a club soda. Are you an AA now? No, I'm not an alcoholic. Alcoholics go to meetings. I go to bars. I mean, I just don't want to stand around drinking club soda at a bar or talking to people. It's just not. It has gotten dramatically easier though. I'm convinced I'm not an alcoholic. I'm 10 days in and I'm not really having trouble not drinking. So, I have friends who are alcoholics who would have been in DTs a long time ago. So actually every year, this is like, if I can get past this hump, if I can get past it, like that first week, or if I can get deep past the first weekend of Lent or Advent, every time I always give up alcohol. I can do it. It's just that first solid 10 days or so that's, you know, that first weekend, and I always have a stressful week the second week and I can never do it. So I did it this time. So I think I'm home free. Famous last words. I've just cheated every other way in the sense of like rice and soy sauce and all kinds of stuff I'm not supposed to be eating. Nap definitely in the plans this afternoon. You know, I think that there's a, how to say it? I think there's some kind of weird shame in America about taking a nap, though there's so much scientific study about how underslept we are, or sleeping in general. There's a shame about like, oh, you sleep in, oh, you should. And it doesn't matter how many times someone puts out a scientific study showing how underslept we are, how strategic it is to be well rested, how one of the best things most people could do for their health and their productivity, DL the above, would be to get some sleep, go take a nap, go to bed early, sleep in. It really is something that we deeply, deeply need, and it will make you better at everything you're trying to do. And yet we just got this puritanical thing going where it's like, it's puritanical or slash Catholic guilt, but the American version of Catholic guilt that people talk about is in fact kind of a weaponized version of the Puritan guilt thing. It's Puritan guilt with rosaries attached to it. It's not actually very Catholic, but that's another whole episode sometime. Actually, I'm going to touch on that a little bit later, I think. But yes, yeah, so I'm going to take a nap, like a long nap. I'm going to set my alarm, but only pretty much to track my sleep. I'm like, because I want to see how deep I went and how it worked. And I just drank this coffee, which is probably going to jack it up. But, you know, yesterday I attempted what the Brits call an espresso nap, which I tell you what, let me give you my nap protocol. Let me give you a nap hack. This is a great hack, right? Okay. The Brits have this thing called the espresso nap. So, you know, like a power nap, you know, if you go down for different amounts of time, you get different things, right? So if you're just trying to get energy, you really shouldn't go down for more than 10 to 20 minutes, because you'll go into a real bona fide sleep cycle. And then you'll wake up at the trough in the bottom of a straight sleep cycle, and it's rough, and you'll feel worse afterwards. If you can actually give yourself a nap long enough to get a full sleep cycle in, and there's software you can use and alarms attached to software in your smartphone that you can just kind of set it to do that. That's a good thing, because you can actually catch what would be considered another hour of sleep like in at nighttime, but it takes 45 minutes to an hour most time to do that. Some people just don't have that nap time. But if you're not going to sleep at least that long, 10 to 20 is probably a better idea. So anyway, the Brits have this thing called the espresso nap, and it's pretty cool. What they do is you get an espresso, or like a strong cup of coffee of some kind. I did this yesterday. I made a really, really, really strong batch brew coffee, and then put a few pieces of ice in it to cool it down to room temp. And you take it upstairs, set it next to your bed. You get everything set up. You get yourself, maybe even lay down in bed and wait for a few minutes and kind of meditate a little bit, read a little, do whatever you need to do to get yourself where you're about to doze off. And then you slam the coffee and you go to sleep. Now, the thing is that caffeine takes 20 minutes to kick in, right? So you wake up from the nap with your normal, you'll usually wake up before the alarm, and you wake up, you get the bounce from the 20 minute, you get the bounce from like about a perfect kind of 20 minute power nap, and the caffeine kicks in. So you get the double bounce. Now, what I like to do, and this is another kind of like little hack to get some energy in the afternoon, is the reboot shower. You know, I mean, I've noticed that if I will just, I usually have a cup of coffee or something, but then if I just go take a shower, a nice hot shower, and man, if you combine it with a hot shower and then a cold shower right in a row, and you get out and you dry off, put yourself back together. And if this is going to sound so weird, and I don't know if this is psychosomatic or what, but for me, I change clothes, or at least put a different shirt on, And it psychologically kind of makes you feel like, oh, this is a new day. Like I had a night's sleep and now this is a new day. Cause you did what you did when you go to bed, you did what you do when you wake up and you put different clothes on. So now you're kind of like on a different time set. And I don't know, it really gives me the bounce. So if you combine those two, which I do every once in a while, I will do espresso nap, reboot shower, hot, cold, different shirt. And I'm kind of on, you know, it kind of like, it gives you a bump, like a bump. There you go. That was supposed to be the, okay. So if you know how my brain works, on one of the like little hash marks underneath weekend plans on my outline, it says nap. Yeah. that's what I turn nap into. You wonder why I never get through my outline. There's like some really good stuff on the end of this outline, talking about loving your neighbors, yourself, and some stuff about Elon Musk's brother and this new restaurant project he's doing. I have had those on my outline for 3 days in a row. So, oh goodness. But we're going to keep going. Well, hey, one of the things I got invited to tonight was Stations of the Cross. You know, I've just never been a Stations guy. I don't know what it is. It's just like, I'm not, I think I lack liturgical imagination. I don't think I have the ability to kind of put myself in a place, you know, and picture that event back then. You know, I have a book called, Personality and Spirituality, or Prayer and Personality. It talks about Myers-Briggs types and the type of spirituality and prayer that's best for you. And so the Jesuit thing is like an ISTJ. That's kind of the Jesuit thing. I'm an ENFP, the polar opposite. Now, what's funny is that Ignatian spirituality means a lot to me and has a really meaningful place in my, with Ignatius, St. Ignatius Loyola was the founder of the Jesuits, if you're not super on the Catholic team. So they call Jesuit spirituality Ignatian spirituality. And Ignatian spirituality actually plays a pretty big role in the way I view the world and the way I view spirituality, but I'm just really bad at it. I just can't put. So what they said that you should do is put yourself back in. So you put yourself, you picture yourself being the woman at the well. You're going to the well. It's hot. It's the middle of the day. You take the bucket, you put it down, you're getting some water. You see the sky walking up, you know, you put yourself in the position of the woman at the well. The Augustinian prayer is Augustinian is the absolute opposite of Jesuit. Jesuit's ISTJ. Augustinian ENFP, right? We bring it forward. We cast that same scene with us in that place or in one of the places, but we put it into a modern situation where, you know, you're that person in going someplace at a time to get something that's because you're kind of ashamed to go in any other time because you're trying to avoid, you know, bumping into anyone or what, you know, you put yourself forward, right? Anyway, that's a kind of liturgical imagination, but it seems like Stations of the Cross is really kind of going back and visiting. It's not time travel in the sense that it's traveling in time. You're going back. You're the one traveling. The other one is actually time travel. You're making time travel. You're making a historic moment travel forward to you, right? So maybe I should figure out how to do that with the Stations, and maybe I could do it. Not really a Stations guy. Not really a liturgical seasons guy, though I've gotten way better at that. I think I've gotten really good at that. I really embrace Lent. I embrace Advent. I embrace, you know, these different moments. Used to not so much do that. Other than that, going to meet the kid I'm talking to. I'm not mentoring the guy. I'm just speaking into a guy's life. I'm going to meet him tomorrow. And that's, I literally have no plans all weekend. That's my plan, is to have no plans. I have a bunch of stuff to do here at the house. I'm going to try to put my new bed together. Bought a new bed like 2 weeks ago. Still haven't put it together. I'm going to try to put my new bed together. I'm just not wanting to carry it all upstairs. I'm lazy. All right, let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People sing sing, and please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your sushi comified host, Andrew Whaley. Sushi comified and hyper caffeinated host, Andrew Whaley. I read the craziest story on the news. So what's the guy's name? I held the thing open on my browser. What's the dude's name? Where is he? There it is. Yeah. Dave Gahan. Yeah. Gahan. The lead singer of Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode. So the lead singer of Depeche Mode evidently had to deny that they were white supremacists or that they were part of the alt-right, because Richard Spencer, who is kind of one of the leaders of the alt-right, who's hyper-educated white dude that's like kind of a white, so he's kind of the new Nazi, the new white supremacist. He's all couching it in terms of Western civilization and all this stuff. And he's the worst kind, because he's actually really intelligent, and not everything he says is false. He's got some insights about some big cultural sweeps and stuff, but he couches in that thing he's talking about. He just couches this nasty, ugly xenophobia that I want nothing to do with. He's the Nazi guy that got punched, or they call him Nazi guy. He says he's not a Nazi, but he's the one that got punched. He's the white supremacist. He's the alt-right guy that got punched. Remember when everybody was putting the picture, the video all over Facebook, and they were calling it Nazi gets punched or whatever. Which I mean, I'm not saying that his position is that different than a Nazi, for sure. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have punched him. Well, I wouldn't have punched him. I'd have wanted to punch him, but I probably wouldn't have punched him. And there was a big debate about whether or not you can punch Nazis on Facebook. That's the dude. Anyway, he said he had high praise for like the new Depeche Mode, the new Depeche Mode album. I just love saying Depeche Mode. He had a high praise for the new Depeche Mode album, and said that everyone knows that Depeche Mode is the official music of the alt-right. And I guess it's because they have really blue collar backgrounds from Northern England or whatever, and the way that they kind of talk about stuff. But Dave Gahan, the lead singer of Depeche Mode, was getting inundated with phone calls asking why they were alt-right and why they were like building the soundtrack for the alt-right. And he's like, we're not alt-right. We're not. So it's pretty funny. And so the thing that you should take away from all of that is what the Depeche Mode? That's still a thing. They're still doing that. They're still together. I mean, I can see you two still being together. I mean, I looked at their 2013 album, the 2011. I'm like, I think Depeche Mode has been making music all this time. I have this weird desire to go back and listen to a bunch of the new Depeche Mode stuff and see what I think about it. I haven't heard Depeche Mode in a really, 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 really long time. Oh, it's such an 80s joke. Depeche Mode. Oh, man. And I'm always talking about feeling like I'm seeing news ripped from the alternative future in the, you know, like in a dystopian film from my youth. And I could just see them saying, you know, Nazis versus Depeche Mode in 2017. And everyone would be going, come on, Depeche Mode is not still going to be around in 2017. Seriously, they're not. It's not like they're the Stones or something. They're not making that level of like music that transcends a generation, you know. But, you know, I guess they are. And I'm saying that I'm not saying that genre can't. The Cure's still out. The Cure's still making music. I don't know if they're still putting out records, though. They're still playing shows, but I think they're kind of like, aren't they just doing like, you know, the Geezers of Rock, here are all the songs you want to hear shows? I don't know. I'm going to get some people mad ripping on Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode. Maybe KMFDM will come back and do an alt-right album just because Depeche Mode said that they weren't and they want to be anti-Depeche Mode. That would be interesting. I read another article. I'm just doing articles today. See, I'm not going to get to Elon Musk and his restaurant chain. Elon Musk's brother and his restaurant chain. That's like almost a whole show, though. There's a lot in this. You're going to be surprised. He's doing a really cool restaurant chain. I read this article about how unlimited data is becoming almost the norm and it's on the rise, which it's funny. I can remember when it was unlimited. It was unlimited. And I remember I had a Sprint contract that was grandfathered in, and I was really bummed because I went through a really rough patch after Coffee Boy, my shop out in California, and I got really broke and I lost my Sprint phone back in 2010 or whatever, you know, 2011. And I was all stoked because I was grandfathered into this like unlimited data thing, and now all the stuff was getting really cool using tons of data, but they got rid of their unlimited plan, and I was still grandfathered in on unlimited data, and I was bummed, right? Well, they're starting to do unlimited data again. They've gotten good at it. And the reason I noticed this is because I just saw that Verizon was doing unlimited data, and I have a fairly data rich plan because I use a ton of it. And, you know, working in online media and listening to stuff in your car and all that stuff, you go through a lot of data, right? And I looked and it was like their new unlimited plan was $5 less than my plan. And I'm like, well, I'm going to switch to unlimited because I went over this last month. I had to pay $20 to get another like 4 gig of data. So I was already thinking, oh, unlimited. Yeah, that's coming back. That's a thing again. And then this article talked about how unlimited is on the rise and how that is probably going to be the equal the death of Wi-Fi, or at least Wi-Fi in public, which is interesting because I've been planning this new Calyx shop, which I'm not planning on having Wi-Fi in. And I've been reading articles about Birch Coffee and Cafe Grumpy and these different places in New York that have killed the Wi-Fi. But I was just talking to my board and I was just for Calyx and I was talking to some friends and I saying, well, they're saying, well, just don't have Wi-Fi. I'm like, but everybody's got data on their phones and they're going to just sit and use their phone, or they're just going to use their phone as a hotspot and go right back to camping out. Right. And now this is even more the case. So I'm either going to have to ban all tablets, phones and laptops in this next shop if I don't want a bunch of robots sitting and staring at laptops with their headphones on. Or if this did go the direction, I could just not have Wi-Fi and accidentally place a ton of screen and foil underneath the ceiling tiles. And man, my phone, I never get any reception in this building. It's like, oh gee, I wonder why. Probably that inch of foil that I put in the ceiling. This has just been my rant here lately. It's just, I'm just everywhere I go, I can't see. I have as my background on my computer right now is a big overarching shot of one of these cafes in New York that cut the Wi-Fi cord. There's one dude on the phone. The place is packed. Everyone's talking to each other. It looks like a cafe used to look like. I'm telling you what, I'm going to create possibly a chain of coffee houses that don't have anything that you didn't have in a coffee house as far as like form before like 85, maybe Italy. I may not even have to go cups. We'll see if it works. But anyway, the death of Wi-Fi, they're predicting the death of Wi-Fi because of the rise of unlimited. Speaking of digital shenanigans, I'm just a commentator today. I'm just one article after another. But this hit home too. Article came out today. 15% of Twitter accounts are bots. So you got all those followers and all those likes on your Twitter feed. Yeah, probably 15% of those are a bot. That they're a computer program running a Twitter account. Now, this sounds crazy, but I noticed early in this show, about halfway, if you go back and look at all my old episodes, you'll start seeing shows that are like, you know, going up over 200 episodes, you know, all these downloads early on, like I kind of spiked up before I'd really built it. It started coming. I said, I had this whole period where we were getting a bunch of downloads, even though I was a brand new show, nobody knew about me. And then I drop off again. And then we slowly started building again. It turns out that there was a bunch of the subscribers to my podcast were robots. They were Twitter bots. They were bots on the internet and doing hits and subscribing. And Podbean figured out how to weed the bots out of the subscription numbers. And I was super disappointed because my numbers went down for a while. I had to build them back up with real human beings. I'm still working on that. So tell a friend to listen to The Counterposition with your unlimited data in your car. Emojis. I was just having a conversation with my friend Megan. Shout out to Dr. Megan Corn. I've been talking to Megan a bunch here lately, and I'm a giant fan. And she is a PhD who uses emojis, and I got me using emojis. And I don't get the whole emoji thing. I mean, I've read about it. I've heard about it, news reports and stuff. And there's a new book out talking about emojis as the new digital universal digital language. It's the digital Esperanto. It's a visual Esperanto, that because and emojis are used kind of the same way around the globe. If you're happy, you put a happy face no matter where you are. If you are mad, you put a mad face. If you're laughing so hard you're crying, you put that emoji with the tears going down, cracking up, right? That's kind of interesting to me. That's pretty interesting to me. That not that one image works universally like that. What's interesting is that we all have the same emotions in human experiences that we can have something to signify to. I want to hit that a little bit when we get back. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your sniffly host, Andrew Whaley, and we are talking about emojis as the new digital Esperanto. I think that's interesting. So you know what I talk about with emojis. If you're just tuning in, emojis are the little smiley face that you send, the little frowny face you send. I just recently got a heart's eyes smiley face. You know, I got to learn how to read these things. I'm using them wrong. I don't know what they mean. I'm trying to send things back like, oh, emoji. So one of my friends sends me a mad emoji, and I think it's like an excited emoji. They're going to have emoji for dummies, emoji for Gen Xers. Cause we used to just like chain smoke clove cigarettes and talk to each other. Emojis, the new digital Esperanto. Now here is what I think is interesting about emojis, is that they point to emotions. Now some of them, you know, you write sushi, you click it, a little sushi, you write coffee, a little picture of a coffee, you can send a little coffee cup. Some things point to objects, but I'm really more interested in the expression indicating feeling and emotional experience emojis, because that means, I think it was Jazani that I was reading the other day, says underneath all of our differences that we are all the same. We all have the same heart. Your heart is my heart. That there is a human nature. There is a range of emotions. Now I might get mad cause someone cut me off in traffic, and some dude in Afghanistan might get mad because he sees a woman without a burqa on or something. What causes anger might be different in different places. What causes arousal, what causes happiness, what causes joy is different. But the point is, we all have joy. We all have anger. We all have arousal. We all have these internal experiences that mark us as a human person. We're all the same heart. We all have the same heart. Now you can numb it. You can make it non-responsive. You can make it responsive to the wrong things. But even then, joy that you're not experiencing because you've numbed your heart is the same. The thing that you're missing out on is the same thing that I have. Joy doesn't change in the human person, right? They're the same things. And I think that it's interesting that we've gone back to almost this primal kind of cave painting-esque. I really want to interview Werner Herzog about emojis. You know, he did the Cave of Forgotten Dreams. It's a really, really, really interesting documentary about the cave paintings in France. And then he just did Lo and Behold, which is a frightening and beautiful and amazing and scary documentary about the internet. But I would love to talk to him about what he thinks about emojis. They seem just so silly because they're cartoons, basically, right? I mean, they're cartoons, you know. And but it's interesting because of these they're pictorial significations of universal emotional states and experiences. I think that's interesting. I think that's super interesting. I mean, you know, Friday has always been kind of the weekly wrap up. You know, I'm going to punt on Elon Musk's brother's new kitchen, which is a Boulder thing. Cause I want to go to the Boulder one and check it out. But I want to punt on that until I got a 2-3 segments to talk about. Cause what he's doing is really interesting. A new restaurant chain. But I guess speaking of places and restaurants and cafes and experiences and universal human experiences, I was researching. I'm about to do a. You're going to hear about this, believe me. I'm about to do a threshold funding for the Calyx prototype, and we need money to do something cool, change the world. So I went out on Indiegogo, Kickstarter, and a couple others, and just like dropped all the successful campaigns and all the interesting looking campaigns for coffee based spaces of different kinds and watch them to see, you know, what worked and what didn't work. Right. One of them was a project for Cutie's Cafe. And what Cutie's Cafe was, a permanent location for an event they've been having, which is called Queers Coffee and Donuts. And it is a coffee house that was for the lesbian, gay, gender queer, gender fluid, gender non-binary, trans, all those people. And every person that they show this person as obviously a dude wearing makeup, dressed like, and it's like, you know, and it would say what their name was, and then underneath them, she, her, hers, like, you know, the pronouns, the quote, she, end quote, prefers, you know, which sidebar is just so strange. This guy that I'm talking to, has a roommate who's trans, and, he always refers to her as him, and I refuse to call her him in conversation. So I'll say, well, what does she do when you say this and this? He says, well, he usually says that, and we go by, and it's, I've learned how to sort it out in my mind. Anyway, there's a sidebar. It's just a strange thing having a friend who's close friends with someone who really has bought into this. Cause I have gay and lesbian friends full on. I don't have any like full on, I've bought into the genderqueer kind of thing friends, you know. I'm too old for that, I guess. It's a millennial game. It's a young man's game. Anyway, so Cutie's Cafe is this thing, and they're going to like try to start the space so that people can feel safe and people can feel welcome, and people like us can do A, B, and C. And you know, that just got me thinking about the entire concept of what does it mean to make someone welcome? What does it mean to feel welcome? What does it mean to feel safe? What is that? why are we not creating, and I say we as in like Catholics or Christians, people dedicated to the ancient faith, why are we not making places where people feel comfortable, that people feel safe, that people feel welcome? And then I think the question is, you have to flip it back to them. What would make you feel safe and welcome? And I think that ironically, it ends up being the same thing as kind of really fundamentalist kind of religion and stuff. I want to be around people who think like me and agree with me and think that everything that I do and think is good and okay. Basically, you don't want to be disagreed with. Now, I get it. You don't want to be hated, but we've redefined hate as, oh, you disagree with me. You think that what I'm doing is wrong. Why do you hate me? I don't hate you. I think that you're wrong. I think that you, what you think is real and what I think is real clash. And I think that reality is one thing. And so we can't both be right. But regardless of what it is, and this pulls back to kind of the project that I'm trying to build with Calyx, is like, I remember like back my freshman year, there was a goth coffee house in, or at least at nighttime, it was like a full on goth coffee house in Ventura. And man, it was the most boring place there. It was the most boring place I've ever been in. And I was the most exciting person in this place. Why? Well, because they were all dressed like Victorian vampires. They were all like wearing crazy made up makeup, black lipstick, long coats and stuff. So how in the world am some transplanted Midwesterner the most interesting person in a place like that? Because they're all exactly the same. I was the only one that was different in the whole bunch. Now, I was perfectly normal and they were very different, but they had made a place where different was normal. So the normal was different. I can't stand homogeneity. It's one of the things that drives me nuts. It's just like when you go someplace, you go to a cafe, you go to a place and it's all the same people, especially cafes. Just drives me nuts with cafes, because one of the marks of the third place is that, you know, in coffee houses is kind of the absolute biggest archetype of that third place. Work being your first place, home being your first place, work being your second place, third place is being the places in society where we dwell, right? And places like the cafe, the bistro, the beer garden in Germany, the old general store in America, the coffee house in old England, the cafe in Vienna, you know, the, you know, these different places, the tavern, the American tavern, the corner pub, you know, Cheers, hey Norm, that whole thing, you know, these places we dwell, right? And one of the things that rich and poor, different races, different socioeconomic classes, different religions, the different ages, the old and the young mix in these places. It's the whole thing is that it's a blank slate that you can come and be yourself around other people that are not like you and be welcome. And now we have, I'm offended by a goth coffee house. I'm offended by a Christian fundamentalist coffee. I'm offended by a Christian coffee house. I'm offended by cuties, the genderqueer coffee house. Because what they say is that you have to believe in me. I have defined reality as what I think. And if you disagree with me, then you're hating. And I want you to just not be around me. We've decided that to be comfortable. Well, first of all, we decided that comfortable is like this great thing that we need to all have all the time. And to be comfortable, you have to be in a safe place where you're agreed with by everyone. And I just think that's just a bad, bad idea. So I would encourage people opening Cuties Cafe to find a cafe that's not like them, that everyone's not like them, and go and feel welcome because you're different. That's kind of what I'm about in this world to a certain extent. All right, we're done. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Happy weekend, kiddos.
Stone, I take your place, marble stone.